We have begun the period of the 9 days, coming out of Rosh Chodesh now. And there is a practice that some have and some stay away from of making siyumim during the 9 days. And during those siyumim, to have meat and to maybe drink wine, which is otherwise prohibited by dint of minig during this time. And I thought I would talk about a little bit about the nature of that controversy, talk a little bit about the history, and by the time we're done, not necessarily going to take a side on that, Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim, but maybe we will try to a little bit give some perspective and somewhat perhaps of a way of looking at both sides. So, in any event, first, just to begin by noting that one could compare this to the fast of Erev Pesach, to Tainis Bechorim, where there is also a common practice nowadays to make siyumim, and that means that those who attend the siyumim generally don't fast. So it's interesting to compare them because nowadays there's far less controversy regarding the Erev Pesach fast. And I think it's probably an accurate statement to say that the vast majority of shuls probably conduct siyumim on Erev Pesach, maybe even multiple siyumim on Erev Pesach, and there's very little objection to that, while there is significantly more controversy surrounding siyumim during the 9 days. There also are other differences, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit, that when a siyum happens on Erev Pesach, so then that generally means the fast is over after that siyum happens. So it's not only that there's eating taking place at the siyum, but then there's no more fasting for the rest of the day, while the siyum on during the 9 days is an occasion for eating meat. But after the siyum is over, so then the restrictions return, not only for the rest of the 9 days, but for the rest of that day. The restriction is only lifted during the siyum itself, which is an interesting difference. So that difference, probably to explain that, we would probably have to focus more on aspects that are unique to the Erev Pesach fast, which we won't necessarily be able to focus on so much tonight. But just as far as the first point, the fact that Erev Pesach is not so controversial, and the 9 days, the Siyum is controversial, so that seems to be a fair statement. But it wasn't always the case. And if you go back in history, not so long ago, go back to the 1800s, not a very long time ago in this scope of things, so you probably find that it was the other way around, or at least that the Erev Pesach Siyum was equally controversial. Back then, there was significant opposition to the Erev Pesach Siyum. Why that has shifted so much is interesting. Again, maybe that's more of a conversation for Erev Pesach. But just what's negev for us now, it's interesting to note that to a certain extent, it was perhaps then even more controversial than a siyum during the 9 days. And the idea that it should be more controversial to suspend the Erev Pesach fast than to suspend the restrictions for the 9 days may be explained, as some have suggested, that the source for fasting on Erev Pesach is a little bit more Talmudically based than the source for abstaining from meat and wine during the 9 days. Neither are really very clearly in Shas, but when it comes to fasting on Erev Pesach, it's a little bit more, as a Yerushalmi that kind of says it, so it kind of has a source in Shas. When it comes to abstaining from meat and wine during the 9 days. So we do that by dint of minig. So that is a little bit of the basis for having a greater objection to suspending the practice on Erev Pesach, but it's a very small aspect that goes in that direction. And for the most part, most of the objection really goes in the other direction. And it seems that there is a much greater hesitancy that comes to any sense of trying to run away, so to speak, from the avelus of the korban than there is towards avoiding the fast on Erev Pesach. So let's focus tonight on that aspect, on this concern about whether there is a problem with avoiding the avelus of the korban. Is that what the siyum actually constitutes? And a little bit of the history of the relationship to the siyum and how we could perhaps look at it. So as far as abstaining from meat and wine during the 9 days, so as we mentioned, this is a custom. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about how it's basically an embarrassment that there are people who have a hard time with this. At first, he's not talking necessarily about siyumim. He addresses that also, as we'll see soon. But he's talking about people here who just aren't careful about this. And he references the fact that there are people who voluntarily abstain from meat and wine for much longer periods of time without having such a justification as the Churban Habayis. And the fact that Jews who are mourning or should be mourning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash are not able, just for a period of 9 days, to stay away from meat and wine, he thinks that that is highly embarrassing. And this is something which, as we noted, comes from custom, that the Gemara talks about abstaining just in the time immediately before Tisha B'Av. This is a Mishnah in Tainus and Daf Chavav Mid Beis, and the Gemara a little bit later on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. It's not 100% clear whether it's talking about specifically the Suda Mafsekes, the meal right before Tisha B'Av, or the entire afternoon of Erev Tisha B'Av, but that's all we have, mean Dina de Gemara, that we don't eat meat and drink wine immediately before Tisha B'Av. So the minig is that we extend this practice. And in the Shulchan Aruch, so we find three different versions of how we extend it. Either going back to already the whole period of the 3 weeks, going back to Shavuos B'Tammuz, or from this past day, from Rosh Chodesh Av, or Shavua Shechalbo, which for this year would mean starting from this coming Sunday. And the prevalent Ashkenazi practice is what we call the 9 days, as the Rama records, from Rosh Chodesh Av. Okay, and this minig is already mentioned by the Rambam, and we treat this very seriously. And Beis Yosef quotes from the Ramban and from the Rashba that somebody who's disrespectful towards this custom is being parried together, and that's a very serious thing. This is not something to take lightly just because it's not coming Medina de Gemara. It's a minig that we take very seriously. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that this has the status of a neder al das rabim, and it's not something that can be undone, and therefore it's binding as a din min haTorah because of its status as a neder. So whether or not it originates from the Torah or from the Gemara, but it has a binding status now because it's been accepted, and it's something which we can't take lightly. We are obligated to observe this restriction against eating meat and drinking wine during the designated time period, which we'll assume for our purposes is the 9 days. So within that practice, however, the Rama does write that if there is a Sudas Mitzvah, which includes a siyum maseches. So whoever is a part of the meal, as language is kol hashayachim l'suda, are able to eat meat and to drink wine. So on the surface, shouldn't have a problem. There it is, the Ramah, the same Ramah, who says that we have a minig not to eat meat and drink wine from Rosh Chodesh Av, also says that if there is a pidgin aben or a bris or a siyum mesechta, so then you're allowed to do these things. You're allowed to eat meat and drink wine. And the only indication that you have there that there's any kind of discomfort with it, that there's anything that's not 100% straightforward, is that he does say that one should be mitzamsem, that you shouldn't have the whole world over, you shouldn't add more than necessary in terms of the guest list. And he also notes that during the actual week of Tisha B'Av, Shavuot Shechal Bo, so then we take things with a little bit more chumrah, and you should only have a exact minyan. You should only have a minyan mitzumzum. So that aspect makes it sound like there is something to be a little bit uncomfortable with, the idea that there should be some limitation in terms of who you invite. And there were those who expressed a greater discomfort. So among those was the Sefer Tshuva Me'ava, Reb Lezer Fleckels, was a great Talmud of the Noda Behuda. We should note that he was on record also as objecting to the Erev Pesach Siyum. He's one of the sources that we have, that there were those Gedolim of that generation. He records his Rebbe, the Noda Behuda, as being among those who didn't like the Siyum on Erev Pesach. But here, talking about the Siyum during the 9 days, so the Tshuva Me'ava writes that he doesn't think that it's really comparable. We talk about a bris mila and a pidgin aben and a siyum. They're not really all in the same category, because the bris and the pidgin aben, so they have to be when they are. But a siyum, so that you could wait until a time that is more appropriate. And since the 9 days is not a time that's so appropriate, so you should make it a different time. And he writes, certainly shouldn't be during a Shavuot Shechal Bo. So others didn't think it was necessarily such a problem. Rav Yaakov Shalom Sofer, the Sefer Teres Chaim, so he responded that you could move a siyum to allow for a more elaborate type of party, but that doesn't mean that it has to be moved from its natural time, if that's the time that it falls out. And since we've established that it can take place during those times, so then it doesn't mean that there's any reason why you have to move it. So this idea that the Ramah has, that meat and wine can be eaten at a siyum, so that in general has been brought by all the other poskim, the Chayyadim, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Nesivis and Hesder HaChayim, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, all bring this. It's interesting that it's quoted in the name of Shul Mikutno that he would eat meat on Motzai Tisha B'Av. Our practice is to continue the Hanhagas of the 9 days until the Chatzos of the 10th of Av, because the Beis HaMikdash was still burning till then. So Shul Mikutno would eat meat on Motzai Tisha B'Av because of the siyum that he made on the Book of Eicha, which is interesting. So this notion that there is an essential heter to eat at a siyum that the Ramah has, this is brought by all the major poskim. So there were some who argued that maybe we should say that even if this is true, so maybe it should only be true for people who would always make such a siyum. So if any time throughout the year, if you finish a mesachta, you make a siyum with a bas v'yayin, and you have a party of that standard, El Yerab and others, he doesn't say it absolutely, but he thinks maybe it's possible to argue that only somebody who normally any time of the year would make a siyum like that, so then he could make a siyum on that level during the 9 days as well. But if the rest of the year, when you finish a Masechta, you don't necessarily go all out, or you're not necessarily makbid to have fleishiks. So then perhaps you shouldn't have a siyum on that level during the 9 days. And others didn't accept that. So the same Sefer Taras Chaim, he said, why should we have such a kpeda? We don't necessarily have to look to your history and say, what do you do in every other occasion? We should only look at what we see now. The son of the Korban Asano, Rabbi Didji Atayi Weil, the Korban Asano was from Netanya Weil, so Netanya Weil, so his son Rabbi Didji Weil, so he writes in his Chuvas that his father, the Korban Asano, he would make a siyum during the 9 days, and he notes that he normally didn't make siyum the rest of the year, but he would make during the 9 days. So too, the Taras Chaim says he doesn't understand why we necessarily have to worry about what you do the rest of the year. He didn't think that this was necessarily a objection. It's interesting, in the Sefer Avnei Shoham, it's a beautiful Sefer, many Sfarim by that title, but there's a whole series of Sfarim called Avnei Shoham. It's written by a Rav from Antwerp by the name of Rav Yeshaya Slomovitz. He has many beautiful Sfarim with great detail on the Moadim and other things. So he has an essay there where he has a sushtel to a discussion. Our practice normally is that on Shal Shudas time, when we bench Shal Shudas, we bench Shalakos, but we don't drink from the wine, because the Shal Shudas is going till after dark. So after we bench, we don't drink the wine, because it's after dark and we can't drink or eat after Shkia before Havdalah. But there was a day in Poskim that you could drink the wine after benching, because it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. So within that, there were those who said that maybe that view, that you could drink the wine for benching, should only be extended to those who always bench halakos. And only they are allowed to drink the wine for benching after Shkia. But if normally you're not makbid to bench halakos, so then that heter to drink the wine after Shkia wouldn't apply. And others said, again, what do we care what you do the rest of the week? If right now you want to bench al hakos, if you're assuming it's mutter, it should be mutter, regardless of what you do the rest of the time. So he has a discussion comparing those two positions. And in both cases, so the response is that maybe you should say that only somebody who believes that philosophically it's not kedai to make a siyum on meat. So then for him to say, okay, but during the 9 days I'll make an exception, so that maybe is inappropriate. But somebody who agrees in general that it's nice to make a siyum and go all out, but just he doesn't always extend himself, so then that's not a reason to say that he's not allowed to make such a siyum during the 9 days. So that was a part of the whole back and forth. So, okay. So let's say we accept that if you have a Masechta that's completed during the 9 days, so then you don't necessarily have to move it out of the 9 days. But what about moving it into the 9 days, which could happen in two different directions? Either you're speeding up in order to finish during the 9 days, or you will slow down, intentionally delay it. So that would be a different story, presumably. So the Elia Rabba is quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, and this he didn't like. So this, he said, that's a real problem to manipulate the schedule to hit during the 9 days. And there were many others who agreed with this, many others who thought that indeed that would be an issue. And the Aruch HaShulchan is among those. He calls that a Davar Mechur. But he does have a little bit more of a forgiving attitude towards somebody who Davka starts a Masechta with the intention of finishing it during that time. And apparently it seems that the net gain that will come to Talmud Torah is a justification. So the fact that you're learning Davka for that purpose, that's something that can redeem the planet. So there's also those who are machalik between the two directions, that say delaying is one thing, but accelerating, that's something that we can also credit a little bit more. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden and his sitter, so he wrote that if you're going to learn faster, so that's something that we can give credit to. That's an expression of enthusiasm, as long as you're not sacrificing understanding. In the Tshuva Smayim Chaim, there's a lot of Sfarim by that title. This happens to be the Mayim Chaim of Rabbi Yosef Mashash. So he has an interesting statement there, which you have to assume that he meant a little bit facetiously. But he said there were those who were concerned that if you speed up the learning, it's a harama. So he said, halavai, it should be a harama, halavai, that all haramas should be like this. And this is going to result in learning more. So halavai, that should be the worst harama anybody ever does. But then he says, together with that, he says, maybe you should say that somebody who doesn't speed up his learning, he's the one who's guilty of a harama, because he's fooling himself into thinking he's Yotzei Talmud Torah, and we see that he's not doing as much as he could, because he could have sped up the learning. So again, I have to imagine he doesn't really mean that 100% seriously. Presumably, the one who's not speeding up his learning is fulfilling his mitzvah of Talmud Torah in other ways, but it's a interesting way of looking at things. So, you do have this whole back and forth, but nonetheless, there were a lot of poskim who were more tolerant of the idea of maneuvering the schedule in order to have the siyum fall out during the 9 days. So, it's interesting that there really are two aspects to this question. So in a lot of literature about this, so many point to a Gemara in Moed Katan on Daf Tesamud Aleph, where the Gemara talks about delaying the completion of the Beis HaMikdash, and you can really interpret the implications of that Gemara in both ways, depending on how you want to bring it as a Raya. You could bring it as a Raya in both directions. But either way, it's only addressing really one aspect of the whole debate here. The whole question of whether it's proper to delay a mitzvah once you're ready to complete it. But we know that that's not the only issue here. That's one part of it, but also the issue is, what about the apparent manipulation of the siyum for the purpose of avoiding the avelus of the Churban? So that would seem to be really what's driving the machlokas even more. Although they are intertwined, because in addition to the concern that you're avoiding the avelus of the Churban, but if that's what's motivating you, so then that also may call the siyum itself into question. So in the Tshuvas Menachas Yitzchak, for example, he writes that a siyum that's motivated specifically by a desire to eat meat, he writes, is not only inappropriate, it's actually not even effective. So that's surprising, because that's a very strong formulation, especially because we're talking about Talmud Torah here, and Talmud Torah is where we normally say that L'olam yasek adam b'Torah mitzvah afilu shol lishma shemitoch shol lishma ba lishma. So it's an interesting formulation. It seems to be a particularly strong way of saying it. But in any event, so this is a part of the whole back and forth. There's also an interesting tshuva about this in the tshuvas of Rav Shlomo Kluger, one of the many svarim of tshuvas of Rav Shlomo Kluger, and the tshuvas Aleph Halacha Shlomo, where he was very against learning only for the sake of the siyum, but he thought it was a little bit of a subjective assessment that if it was a very enhanced accomplishment, if it really was a big deal kind of siyum, you learned a big mesechta, so even if you were motivated for the siyum, so it was mitoch shel olishma, but then you accomplished something big because of that, so then that would bring enough actual simcha that would qualify, even if it started from that kind of motivation, which is, again, a very interesting kind of perspective. So a part of the whole tension here, which was alluded to earlier, as we noted by the Rama, is the whole question of who can be invited. So this question of what exactly is the threshold for an invitation. So we saw that the Rama said perhaps it should be limited. So everyone agrees that some guests can be invited, that the Siyum is not limited only to the one who actually did the learning. But there is a debate as to who exactly can be included in the invitation. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden, for example, again in his Siddur, so he allows inviting a large group as long as they're people who are at least supportive of the learning. But he writes that to invite strangers who are there just to make the crowd bigger, he thought that that was a problem. And Maharil went so far as to say that to have people who have no shaychus at all, he even called that a mitzvah habavi avera. So that's, again, a pretty strong formulation. So nowadays we have siyumim in summer camps, and in the summer camps we serve a meal with meat to all the campers. So is that a problem? So many quote a ruling from Rav Moshe Feinstein, which you can find in Rabbi Eider's book on the Bein HaMitzarim. It's also quoted in the Nitei Gavriel, that Rav Moshe wrote that a camp environment, even though it's a temporary kind of chevra, but while it lasts in the summertime, so that creates its own social circle, and that is a justified guest list for this purpose. And he says that's also true for adults and for the families that spend the summers in a bungalow colony. So the same svara that you have for children in a summer camp also applies to adults in a bungalow colony. And he thought that that was acceptable. Rav Aaron Felder, who was a Talmud of Rav Moshe also, in his Sefer Moedei Assurance, he quotes that he heard from Rav Moshe that the minig nowadays is to have people who don't have any shaychus at all, to have them at the Siyum, even though Rav Harfinis, who was Talmud Chacham from the Satmar community, so he thought that Rav Moshe wouldn't be so makel to extend it to a hotel. You have a hotel where people don't necessarily know each other, and they hire somebody to come in and make a siyum on behalf of all the guests who doesn't know anybody. He thought that Rav Moshe Sfar wouldn't go so far, but Felder, who again did learn about Rav Moshe directly, he thought that nowadays the minig was to be more makel. Would this go so far as to be makel even by the restaurants that have a siyumim going on around the clock? Hard to say. It seems to be a significant stretch for all of these svaras, even Rav Moshe's svara. But one could argue that perhaps it's better than the alternative. You know, that's part of the complicated cheshbon in terms of where you're helping and where you're hurting. There's a whole literature going back to Rav Kook about whether the Fleishik restaurants should stay open during the 9 days in order to make sure that kosher food would be provided to those who are going to be eating meat anyway. So one could argue if the people are going to be eating meat during the 9 days, so better at least there should be some kind of a siyum. It's better than nothing. Although maybe you could argue that it's going to be convincing people who wouldn't otherwise be eating meat that this is a adequate siyum, when many would argue that it isn't. So that's a part of the whole back and forth that we sometimes have when trying to figure, are we helping or hurting? But in any event, under more normal circumstances, so Rabbi Avadja in his Tshuvas and Yabi Omer, Rabbi Avadja Yosef writes that he thinks that there is an advantage to having a lot of guests, even if they're strangers, because it does contribute to Kavarat Torah, and that is support for the Talmud Chacham, and it motivates other people, and it inspires other people. So he's more lenient in general in terms of having a larger crowd. And he thought that the only limitation, if you can have people who have no appreciation at all for the Torah or no ability to grasp the significance of what's going on, so fine, that's inappropriate. But otherwise, even people who don't necessarily have a shaychus to the Messiah, it's going to contribute to Kavodat Torah, and it's going to inspire people, so that's still worthwhile. So, given this back and forth, where we've seen that there are some who are more accepting and there are some who are less accepting, and the question of who can be invited and who can't be invited, and acknowledging that there is a significant machlokas about this, and there are those who are very discouraging of the whole practice. I've heard Rav Asher Weiss, for example, say that even if you do finish, even if you do finish during the 9 days, you should wait till afterwards. And yet, I think all of us have seen siyumim taking place with great Talmidei Chachamim participating as well. So if we can acknowledge that this is an area where there are different practices and Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, so maybe just to spend a few minutes trying to explain the position of why there has been somewhat more of a receptive attitude among those who have had a little bit more of a makel attitude or receptive attitude, maybe even a positive attitude towards the siyumim. So just to make a few observations. So first of all, the idea of abstaining from meat and wine is not per se a practice of avelus. And a avel in Shiva is allowed to have meat and wine. It's only during aninus that he doesn't have meat and wine. But during Shiva, an Avel does have meat and wine. And the time right before Tisha B'Av, okay, so that is on a level of intensity like Aninus. And like we said, by Minig, so we extend the time of Erev Tisha B'Av to this longer period, our practice here for the 9 days. So what exactly is the nature of that minhag? So that's something that we need to try to understand a little bit. So there are differences from the public avelus of the Chorban and the private avelus of Rachman Latzlan, somebody who passes away. Among the differences is that a private shiva, so we want to try to be menachem the avel, we want to try to bring him comfort. So wine, for example, is introduced as a tool of nechama for somebody who is in the process of avelus. So one could have thought, actually, that maybe there could have been a logic to not having meat and wine during personal avelus, but there is a reason to have it, because we're also trying to introduce an aspect of nechama, which is not really a part of what's going on during the 9 days. And Rav Soloveitchik is often quoted as having pointed out that there's a difference in direction between the public avelus of the Chorban and the private avelus of an individual for a relative, where when it comes to the private avelus, there is a descending severity, that it starts with aninus and goes into the first days of Shiva, and then the last days of Shiva, and then Shloshim and Yud Beis Chodesh. Essentially, the Avel is taken to softer and softer levels of Avelus, so that he is ultimately eased out of the mourning and given a process of Nechama. Well, when it comes to the public Avelus, where the individual really is not naturally drawn to the experience of grief and is very disconnected from it and needs to have it imposed upon him, so then it goes in the opposite direction and it is intensified. So we go from the 3 weeks to the 9 days to Shavuot Shechalbo to Tisha B'Av. We go from the less intense Kufa to the most intense Kufa, because we need to impose that emotional intensity on the individual. And that's a whole different type of experience than the private Avelis. So that's one difference which is worth noting. And that's perhaps a part of the background. But still, the idea of extending the minig from Erev Tisha B'Av to the 9 days is itself still interesting and something that we need to explain a little bit more. The idea of the mentality of aninus, which we say is mesa muta lofanav, when the person is really freshly grieved, kvura hasn't even happened yet. So the idea of extending that throughout the whole 9 days, that would seem a little bit to defeat the purpose then, if we're trying to create a gradual intensification. So to take the chumrah of Erev Tisha B'Av and to extend that for the whole 9 days, that would seem a little bit to go against this whole goal. So it has to also be a little bit more to it. So perhaps we can add another aspect, and maybe that would draw on the following. So the Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra on Daf Samach Amud Beis notes that after the Churban, there were those who wanted to prohibit ever having meat and wine again, because these were aspects of the Avodah. So meat was eaten as part of the Hakrovas HaKarbanos, and wine was brought as part of the Nesachim. And if we can't have them in the part of the as part of the Avodah, so then maybe we shouldn't have them in our personal lives either. And the Gemara says that Rabbi Yeshua responded, that's basically a reductio ad absurdum, that if that's what we're going to do, so then we shouldn't have fruit either, because we don't have Bikurim anymore, so then by the same logic we shouldn't have fruit, and we shouldn't have bread because of the chalos and the matzos that were used, and we shouldn't have water because of the nisach hamayim. So all these things that were used in the Beis HaMikdash we shouldn't have in our personal lives, and that clearly is not going to work. So therefore the whole thing wasn't accepted. So what seems to be the case here is that the plan in its totality was not accepted because it wasn't sustainable, but on some level we tried to hold on to it. So the notion of never having meat or wine, that didn't seem to take, because it wasn't really a logical plan. It would have meant never having fruit or water or bread, but on some level we try to hold on to that idea. So during the time when we're most focused on the Avelis of the Churban, during the 9 days, so we try to accept that idea, and we abstain from meat and wine, at least for that 1 week, a year, in order to show that if we can't have a Beis HaMikdash where meat and wine are going to be used in Kedusha, so then we don't want to have it in our private lives either. So perhaps we could suggest that if that's the logic, so when we have a siyum during the 9 days, it's not necessarily a escape from the avelis of the Churban, but rather it is a embrace of the message of the 9 days. And what we're basically saying is that we are longing for the time when meat and wine was used in a context of Kedusha. So since we don't have the opportunity to bring the korbanos and to use meat and wine in that context, so we're looking for other ways to have a mitzvah context for such things. And therefore the siyum is not a way to escape the theme of the 9 days, but it's a emphasis of another aspect of it. And we're saying that we look to a time when we can have these aspects in a context of Kedusha, and this is the closest we can come. And together with that, we do find that there are a number of positive themes that the Svarim do find for Siyumim specifically in the 9 days, and notions that the Siyumim specifically do complement the atmosphere of the 9 days rather than contradict them. You find this specifically in Hasidic Svarim, but elsewhere as well. Not necessarily about the meat and wine, but other aspects of the Siyumim. So, for example, it's noted that the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Nedarim tells us that the Churban was because of Alazva Mes Tarasi, because we abandoned the Torah, and the Klausenberger Rebbe emphasized that our reduction of Talmud Torah was both a cause and effect of the Galus. So therefore, by celebrating the Torah, so this is a corrective, and it's connected to the point that the Gemara specifically wasn't saying just that we didn't learn Torah, but that Gemara was saying, Al Shul Bercha La Torah Tchila, that we didn't emphasize the Torah, we didn't show Cheshivas at Torah, so it's not just that we want to be learning during this time, it's that too. But we want to show Chashivas HaTorah, which is what the Siyumim represent. The Lubavitcher Rebbe also instructed his Chassidim to make a Siyum on every day of the 9 days, not necessarily with meat and wine. Again, it's a separate aspect, but the notion of a Siyum in and of itself, he advocated making one every day of the 9 days, and he pointed to the notion of Pekudah Hashem Yisharim Masam Chilev, and that the Siyum, he said, specifically should be in front of large crowds and should involve material that people are able to relate to. It should be a little bit shorter and easier for people to understand, which is interesting, the idea that he's invoking specifically Pekudi Hashem Yisharim, because that's actually the pasuk which is invoked by the Gemara to say that Talmud Torah is usur during times of Avelis, and so we have an Isser Talmud Torah on Tisha B'Av for that reason. So quoting that pasuk here is interesting, and apparently what the Rebbe is trying to say is that we want to correct the mistakes that brought about the Churban, and we want to change the atmosphere from a context where we didn't properly appreciate the Torah to one in which we esteem the Torah and we find it glorious. And he makes reference there to Al Pi Derech HaDrush, a explanation of the language of the Mishnah, Mishenichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha. So the way he understands it is when, Al Pi Derech HaDrush, when Av begins, so we should be Memait, the Avelus of Av, with Simcha, with appropriate Simcha, through Talmud Torah. In the Tshuva Safarkasta Danya of Rav David Sperber, so he also notes that even if you don't understand the learning fully, it's going to have a uplifting effect, and that's also something that's valuable and kedai for this time. And also, as the Chiddush HaRim points out, so the gathering aspect of the Siyum is something that will be a corrective to the Sinas Chinam that was a source of the Galus. So both the Talmud Torah and the gathering is tikkunim, or correctives to what have been identified as causes of the Churban, the Sinas Chinam, and the abandonment of the Torah, and again, abandonment specifically of the Cheshivas HaTorah. So we could put that together with what we're suggesting about the Basar V'Yayin specifically in the context of Kedusha. So maybe all of that is relevant to a positive aspect of the Siyum. I see there's a question here with the rule of Halacha Kedivrei HaMekel Be'Evel apply to the 9 days. An interesting question. It's an interesting question. Depends on what we're trying to accomplish with that. And I think here the attitude that's very hesitant to go in this direction is coming from the fear that maybe we're losing something about what the 9 days is supposed to try to mean to us. So again, I would not seek to challenge that attitude necessarily, but I think in terms of trying to know how to relate to the attitude that does embrace the Siyumim, so I think this is a part of how we can look at it. And also just note that there is a fascinating tshuva in the Tshuva's Mishnah Sacher of Rabbi Sacher Dov Teichtel, who was later to be the author of the Im HaBanim Smecha. So he wrote a tshuva in Tammuz of 1940. And the Holocaust was going on all around him. And he was in Czechoslovakia, in Pishtian. And he had just finished learning Megillah with his followers. And his chevra, they didn't want to make a siyum. And they felt that with everything going on, it was inappropriate. They certainly didn't want to invite people, and they didn't want to have meat and wine. They didn't want to have that whole party. It didn't feel that that was fitting. And he responded that this was actually Adarabba, Davka, what was needed. And he wrote there that when World War II began, so Sudos Mitzvah of this type had stopped. And indeed, that was what people were feeling, that it felt inappropriate. And he thought that was the wrong way to feel. And that he thought that these types of events are really a major source of Schuss. And he notes that the language of Siyum that we use to refer to the party, to refer to the meal, is interesting, because really the word Siyum means completion, so that should mean the learning itself. And here, so to use it for the party, so that highlights the fact that that itself is a crucial part of learning, that the learning is completed by the chashivas that is conveyed by this celebration, and that the importance of the mitzvah is reflected in the simcha that is conveyed through the siyum. And so here he's not talking about the 9 days, the tshuva again to be written in Tammuz, but his point that stavka in these darkest moments where we need the schus and we feel like we are the weakest, that the message of the Siyum is most relevant. So again, not necessarily coming to argue with those who feel that it's inappropriate for these days, but being Malamit Chus and to appreciate that those who do are perhaps tapping into some of these ideas. And certainly for those of us who do participate in one or more Siyumim during this time, I think these are some valuable ideas to keep in mind, and just recap what they are. The notion that a sense of chashivas haTorah is a crucial corrective to the idea of alazva mestarasi, which the Navi Yirmiyo and which the Gemara highlights as a cause for the Churban. And here Rav Teichtel saying in general that a sense of chashivas haTorah and the Siyumim representing that is a source of schus in dark times overall. But here specifically Chazal mentioning it in regards to the Churban that we are commemorating. The notion of gathering for the Siyum could perhaps, as the Chiddush Arim points out, be a corrective to the Sinas Chinam. And this notion also that we're adding, that specifically the notion of Basar V'Yayin is a way to incorporate that in a context of Kedusha, maybe is our way of saying that we long for the Beis HaMikdash, where we were able to have Basar V'Yayin in that context. And as soon as the Siyum's over, then we'll go back to abstaining for the rest of the time. And both of those, both the abstaining without the Sudas Mitzvah and the eating them in the context of the Sudas Mitzvah, both of those are emphases of different aspects of what we're trying to remember during the 9 days. And hopefully Again, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. If we're able to maintain the correct perspective, if this is indeed a valid way to call it the correct perspective, we're able to maintain attitudes such as these, maybe we will be able to bring ourselves to the place where next year this time we will be able to partake of Basar V'Yayin in a context of Kedusha, not because we're necessarily making siyumim, we should make siyumim also, but because we will be Birushalayim Habanuya, and we will no longer have to fast this time of year, but we will be able to celebrate, and we shall know only Simchas and Yeshuas. So, Ken Yehi Ratzon, should be only good things. God willing, next week we'll talk about something else. Presumably it won't be Wednesday night, because that's already Tisha B'Av, but we'll find a good night, and Baz Hashem, we'll find something appropriate to talk about. So I wish you all a meaningful beginning of the 9 days, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Yishkach.
Thank you.
Thank you.